Back to Colossians. Colossians chapter 4. We'll be looking at the last section of it, starting in verse 7. This week, as I was preparing this lesson and was considering Tychicus and Onesimus and the message they needed to take to Colossae, I started thinking about how technological changes have made things so different from back then. All right, just click it once. It needs to be on the screen. There we go. And if you really think about it, it's mind-boggling. Consider this. Prior to the invention of the telegraph in 1844, if you wanted to send a message to someone a long distance away, someone out of sound of like of a trumpet or out of line of sight, you know, you use semaphore and flags and for some distances, if you wanted to send a message, it had to be sent physically. Somebody had to physically go with your message and tell them verbally or a written message personally. And we don't even think about that anymore, but that's simply the way it was. Telegraph allowed for electronic signals to be transmitted over long distances and messages finally to be easily transmitted that way. The first transcontinental line was completed in the United States in 1861. The International Telegraph Union was formed in 1865, and the first transatlantic cable was laid in 1866. And those were amazing developments at their time. But even then, with that kind of expansion, it was limited. You could send a message one at a time. You could send multiple messages, one message at a time, and it had to be encoded, sent over the wire, decoded, written down, and then handed to you physically. But that was an amazing thing for the mid-1800s. Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone in 1876, and for the first time, a voice could be transmitted electronically. In 1877, the next year, there were 3,000 phones, 10,000 in 1878. Improvements in circuitry and components and transmission allowed for rapid expansion. By 1900, there's 1.4 million phones in the United States. A transcontinental phone line was completed in 1915, and the push was made for universal service. The idea was that anybody who really wanted a phone could get one and have service to them. Well, by the 1940, there were 15 million phones in the United States. By 1948, it had doubled. 30 million. 1971, 100 million. And now you can't count them. They're all over the place. Long-distance technologies continue to advance. Microwave transmitters were first introduced in 1946. The first mobile phone of some sort, wasn't a cell phone, was in St. Louis in 1946. Satellites were launched in the 1960s, and that also changed communication, a huge leap forward. Because what once had been an impossible dream by the 60s was now simply an expensive reality. You could do it. I remember as a kid, if you were on long distance, it was, I'm on a long distance call. This is expensive. Don't waste my time. Okay? In fact, the joke in the family is a couple aunts. Southerners are a little odd in some ways. Some of you might think a lot of ways. But I have some aunts that speak very fast. You can't keep up with them. And some aunts speak so slow. And apparently two of them were talking on the phone. And that was the gist of their conversation. Now, Martha, you've got to speak faster. This is costing me a fortune. Well, we don't think about it now. It's very inexpensive to pick up the phone and call someone wherever, right? Technology has extremely advanced in such a short time. Experimental cell phone service began in Chicago in 1977. Now there are hundreds of millions of them. In some countries, cell phones dominate. There are more cell phones than there are landlines. The blending of computer with technology into the cell phone now allows not only voice, but text, pictures, video, and connection to the internet. And a lot of you are carrying these things around. You ever think about what an amazing little box that is you carry around with all that it can do? Now, all this simply to say this. We think of this as routine, but it is radically different from what was true just a few years ago. It wasn't that long ago. My son David's over 8,000 miles away in South Africa, And we've communicated with him in a variety of ways. Yes, we've sent some things by, we now call it snail mail, and it can take a week, 2 weeks, or a lot longer for him to get something. But a lot of times he can pick up a phone, he can call us, or we use a computer. And we can even have a thing where we hear him and see him in real time, or very close to it, maybe a fraction of a second lag, but he's how far away? On a different continent? And we can communicate. All that to make two simple points. First, it's important for people to communicate with each other. That's why all the effort to do this, so that we can communicate with each other. The other is that technological changes have made it so easy, in fact, so easy that we now have to find out all sorts of ways to keep from being overwhelmed by communication, but it hasn't been always that way. The importance of the message was seen in the effort that was made to get it through. And it took a lot of effort to get those things through. Paul is in prison. He is in Rome. And he has heard from Epaphras that there are some problems in Colossae. And he wants to communicate to them. So he's going to have to send a letter. Someone has to physically go. He can't hop on a plane. He's in jail. He couldn't, even if they had a plane. But no one else can either. They can't take a car and drive there. Somebody has to physically walk and take sailing ships to make it there. And that's exactly what Paul talks about in Colossians 4, 7 through 9. Turn there if you're not already there. Colossians 4, verse 7. As to all my affairs, Tychicus, our beloved brother and faithful servant and fellow bondservant of the Lord, will bring you information. For I have sent him to you for this very purpose, that you may know about our circumstances and that he may encourage your hearts. And with him, Onesimus, our faithful and beloved brother, who is one of your number. They will inform you about the whole situation here. Now, in these three verses, there are three statements concerning Tychicus and Onesimus telling the Colossians the news about Paul and what is going on in Rome. What's going on there? Now, he didn't write those things down because they were not as crucial to Paul as warning the Colossians about the heresies that were arising. He wanted to instruct them, he wanted to encourage them, he wanted to warn them. Tychicus and Onesimus, they could verbally tell the news once they got there. And the major responsibility of this fell on Tychicus. He is the one who specifically mentioned as the one who would tell about Paul's affairs, and then together they both would tell the Colossians about everything else that was going on in Rome. Now, there are several aspects to what these men would be telling the Colossians. There in verse 7, it tells us that Tychicus would make known Paul's affairs. That's the personal news about Paul. What's going on with him personally? What about his situation? Paul emphasizes this in verse 8 by stating that was part of the reason that Tychicus was being sent. I want him to inform you about what is going on with me, what my situation is, how things are going. Now, that in itself says something about Paul's own sensitivity towards others. It's not uncommon to find men who seem to want to remain reclusive or hidden from those, even those that care about them. They don't talk. They won't communicate. Frankly, my wife and I are a little concerned because we know sons tend to be that way. They don't necessarily always communicate. I'm not even all that good with my parents. I'm glad my mom calls me because I get wrapped up in, it's been how long since I talked with you? But it's easy to find guys, they don't communicate that well. Some of you, when we first met you, wouldn't communicate. We work with you, help you learn how to communicate, because it's important. It's very important. And Paul understood this. But Paul also knew a balance, because there's other guys, you can't get them to shut up, right? You got both extremes. Paul understood the balance. Because somewhere you want to inform others about what's going on in your life so they can pray properly. That was Paul's reason for wanting the Colossians to know. If they do not know what's going on specifically with them, how can they pray specifically? Praying, God bless so-and-so, isn't enough. We need to be praying specifically for what is going on in their life, what kinds of things they are facing, that we might, and then even communicating with them and encouraging them through the Word of God about the things they're dealing with. That means we need to know some specific information. At the same time, we want to be careful where it all becomes about us. And sometimes we run into those kinds of people. They never really ask anything about you, but it's all about them and every detail of their life. Paul knew the balance of that. So he sent a representative. Tychicus will tell you what you need to know about me. I'm not even going to bother to write it down. He knows what you need to know, and he can say it. At the same time, Paul is very clear that he's going to make sure they know about it. So I'm sending Tychicus, not with just my letter, but he's my representative. He will inform you about what's going on. That's a balance that needs to be maintained. Now, Paul's emphasis actually with the Colossians, as important as it was that he wanted them to know what's going on specifically and pray, was that Tychicus was going to be there to encourage them, to encourage them. So there's a letter and there's this personal ministry Tychicus would have. Now, certainly they're going to be encouraged when Tychicus starts telling them about Paul and the circumstances. We know from Philippians that Paul is having a great ministry even though he's in jail in Rome. I mentioned that last week as well. Paul was praying for open doors, but God was sending people to Paul. And he was having opportunity to tell them about Christ while in jail. And that would be encouraging to the Colossians to hear God is using Paul anyways. And he would tell them all about that. The Praetorian Guard that was being affected. Even Caesar's own household, there were new Christians in that household because of Paul being in jail in Rome. Tychicus would also be able to personally minister them in regards to all that was written in the letter. He could explain what they might not understand. He could help them make personal application of those truths. So he's being sent as Paul's representative. In verse 9, we find that both Tychicus and Onesimus would be able to make known to them everything about what was taking place in all the ministry in Rome, because it's not just Paul. There's more going on than just Paul. When I get back from Alaska, we're going to finish the book of Colossians. We're going to find there's five specific people that send their greetings from Rome to Colossae. They're also going to let them know about all those people and probably others not even mentioned. They want to know. It's important to know. It's important that we as believers keep each other informed, not for the purpose of curiosity, not for the purpose of gossip, but for the purpose of praying for one another, encouraging each other, helping one another. That's why we want to inform people. It's not about bragging. It's not about self-centeredness. We want people to pray specifically, properly, effectively. Enter into our lives what God is doing. That's why we put out the prayer letters. That's why they're posted in the back. If someone emails us, we send that out in the church email. In fact, if you aren't getting those, then you're not on my list. Send me an email. The address is there in the bulletin, and I will add you to the list so you can be updated about what's going on with the missionaries. That's how we can pray for them effectively. And they want it, they desire it, they need it. All of that increases the praise to God. Why? Because now you have entered the work, and you will praise God with them as they also let us know what's going on. It increases God's glory. So the goal then is for all of us to become conformed to the image of Christ. Keeping each other informed is helpful toward that end. Now I want to talk about the character of these men because there's several things revealed about them. But before that, we need to talk a little bit about the journey they were going to take, an arduous journey. Paul, again, is in prison. He is in Rome. And it is a major undertaking to get from Rome to Colossae, to send a message there. Somebody has got to go. Tychicus, Onesimus, and apparently maybe a couple others are going to do it. He's concerned about some other churches, not just Colossae, but also the Ephesians and Philippians, and a personal letter to Philemon concerning Onesimus. We know that Tychicus actually did carry the letter to Ephesians. Ephesians 6:21 tells us that. Onesimus, or Tychicus, one of them, is carrying the personal letter to Philemon. Epaphroditus, we're told in Philippians, is the one that carries the letter to them, but it appears they probably were all sent at the same time. If so, they probably all just traveled together. You make that kind of long journey, there's safety in numbers, so they may have done that. In Colossians 4:16, we find that there may have been other letters he was also carrying. It mentions there specifically a letter that was being sent to the Laodiceans. and that the letter from the Colossians was read to the Laodiceans, and the letter from Laodicea was read in Colossae. Now, these letters would become circular, and some of them became part of the New Testament. The epistles were circular letters written to one group, but also be read in the other churches. Now, there are three major ways possible for someone to travel from Rome to Colossae, with some variations in each. Now, the first is you start in Rome and you sail around Italy, down through the straits, walk through the isthmus at Corinth, sail across the Aegean Sea to Ephesus, and then walk to Colossae. One variation is you could walk from Rome to a place called Brundisium. It's only 348 miles, and then take the ship. But it saves you some of the sailing if you get seasick. Now, it's possible Paul did that. He did some sailing, but it's also expensive, and pirates were always a problem. We know the danger of it. Paul mentions in 2 Corinthians 11:25 that in his own travels, he was shipwrecked three times. And once, it says, he spent a night and a day in the deep, floating on wreckage. Now, I don't know about you, and I don't know about even preaching on this one when I'm going to take a sailing ship in a week or two, but that doesn't make me comfortable that I want to go sailing, right? Okay? But that's one way to do it. Now, if they went to Philippi, then someone had to go up to Philippi north and then sail back down. Or maybe Epaphroditus went up there by himself. But that's a lot of sailing. Now, the most difficult way to do it would be to do this. You walk from the Via Flaminia to Ariminium. That's 204 miles up the north of Italy, and then around on the Via Gemina to Aquileia, 205 miles. Then from the Via Flavia, via just means the, we would call it route, the road, from Flavia to Dalmatian Dyrrachium, it's 392 miles. Then you would walk the Via Ignatia to Philippi, and then on to Byzantium. That's 430 miles. Then, if you want to go to Colossae first, it's 407 miles to get there. And then you'd still have to go to Ephesus, which is another 120 miles, even farther if you went to Ephesus first. That's a long walk, a really long walk, about 1,600 miles by foot. I don't know. That's a long way to walk by foot. Now, the most probable route is this one. They probably went from Rome to Brundisium, 348 miles. Then they take a ship across the Adriatic to Dyrrachium. It's 100 miles by ship. Then they walk the Via Ignatia to Philippi. That's 410 miles. And that way, Epaphroditus can give his letter to the Philippians, and they've done that ministry there. Then they would take a ship down along the coast of what is now Turkey to Ephesus, and they can deliver the letter there and encourage them. Then they would walk to Colossae, 120 miles, and encourage them there. That's probably the most likely, but we don't have details. But really, no matter which way they went, this is an arduous journey, a very difficult journey, and filled with all sorts of dangers. There's weather. There's a matter of keeping supplies. There's injury. Anything can happen. Imagine having a 1,600-mile walk and twisting your ankle on the first day out. There's robbers. The importance of the communication between Paul and these churches is seen in all that it takes to deliver the message. That's why I went over that. Do you see how important these letters were? That men would take this kind of a journey, this kind of expense, this kind of risk to deliver them. This also makes us realize these letters would have been crafted with great thoughtfulness. They would not have been just as Paul's immediate reaction to the news or his thoughts for a moment, as so many of the blogs and postings on the social networks sites are today. They're just random musings, it seems, sometimes. Easy and instant communication has made the vast majority of our communication with each other drivel. I don't know what you call it. It's even the news media. It's a waste of time for the most part. When you start looking at it, you find a lot of it is thoughtless. You check it out, it's inaccurate. It's incongruent. It's not consistent with itself. And sometimes it's completely incomprehensible. And yet we're all wrapped up in instant communication. We need to be careful. We want to be those who, like Paul, are going to take some time and thought before we communicate. Make sure we're communicating something that's worth communicating. Proverbs 10:19 has a warning that we should all take to heart. When there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. But he who restrains his lips is wise. The tongue of the righteous is a choice silver. The heart of the wicked is worth little. Paul took the time to carefully craft his messages so that something of substance, something that's now been around for nearly 2,000 years, and still encouraging people by the great truths that he put into it. We need to do the same. Think before you speak. Think before you post something, before you write. Don't be like the wicked. Now let's take a look at the character of these men. Paul's commendation of Tychicus is not just in the words he says about him in this passage, though there's some great commendations here. Perhaps even more so in the responsibility being entrusted to him says something about the character of this man. Now, the name Tychicus comes from a word that means to hit the mark, or it could also mean happen or obtain by chance, and so it would come to mean fortunate. And Tychicus proved by God's promise to be a very fortunate find as a co-worker for Paul. Now, the men, by this time, the letter is written, probably around 61 A.D., may have known each other for quite a few years. 6 to 10 years is the estimate. We first meet Tychicus in Acts chapter 20, verse 4. And there we find he is in Greece with Paul as Paul is making his way back to Jerusalem at the end of his third missionary journey. Tychicus and Trophimus are specifically noted in the text as being from Asia. Trophimus is later specifically mentioned as being from Ephesus. So Tychicus, not being mentioned like that, may have been from another part of Asia. Now, when I say Asia, there's confusion. What do you mean by Asia? We now think a lot of times to say Asia or Asian, we think Far East. Or maybe we might think Middle East or Turkey is often identified as Asia Minor. But in Roman times, Asia referred to the proconsular Asia, which is now in western Turkey. That's this area with the, well, this is proconsular Asia here, this whole section of western Turkey. But Luke uses the term a little differently than that. He specifically mentions different provinces as not being Asia, Mysia, Caria, Phrygia here. His usage seems to be this area of Lydia, which would be Ephesus the major area, but this whole section here. Laodicea, Colossae are just in the Phryganian areas, but up the Lucian Valley. That seems to be what he is talking about in Asia. Now, it's possible Paul could have met Tychicus in any number of places. Paul traveled a lot. If Tychicus in that area, Paul was through those areas. It's possible he may have met on the second missionary journey when Paul stopped for a very, very brief time in Ephesus and did a little bit of preaching and then immediately left. He could have met there. More likely, it's the end of his third missionary or the beginning of the third missionary journey. If we recall the Acts chronology, Paul goes to Ephesus and spends 3 years there preaching and teaching. And his ministry was so powerful, Acts 19:10 records that all in Asia, that's that section there, heard the gospel because of the ministry going on with Paul in Ephesus. The area going to where Colossae is was on the major road going through the Lycus Valley. So there, Laodicea, Hierapolis, all of them would have been part of that. They would have heard it coming from Paul or those that were under Paul going to the valley. So very possible those at Colossae had met Tychicus before. Now when Paul left Ephesus to go to Macedonia and Greece, it appears Tychicus probably went with him, though there's nothing to guarantee that. We do know that somewhere over in Greece, Tychicus joined Paul. Because that, again, is where we find him first mentioned in Acts 20, verse 4. Tychicus then goes with Paul down to Jerusalem. Remember, Paul was taking up a collection among the Gentile churches for the poor in Jerusalem. This was a means by which to try to solidify a good relationship between the Gentile churches and the Jewish church. Tychicus and Trophimus were representatives of the Gentile church in Asia. He had a large group that went with him there. In fact, Trophimus is the one that was seen by certain Jews from Asia. They recognized him, and they're the ones that caused the riot that ended up with Paul being in jail. They caused a riot in the temple. And the Roman guards came out and arrested Paul to protect him from getting stoned to death. And then he ended up in jail for 2 years in Judea, awaiting trial. Now, we don't know exactly what happened to Tychicus during this period. Now, possibly he went back up to Asia, or maybe he stayed with Paul. We don't know. We don't know if he made the journey from Caesarea to Rome, but that's possible. We do know from Acts 27 and 28 that there is more than one person going with Paul. There's a continually we use there, and we know Luke was one of them. So possibly he even made that journey with Paul. Those are possibilities, not certainties. We do know this, though. While Paul is in jail in Rome, and he's there for at least 2 years, the conclusion of Acts, he's still in jail. We know he also was released at some point after that. So 61, 62 AD, he's in jail there. He might have been released 63, 64. We know that Tychicus is there in Rome while Paul's in jail, because that's where he's being sent from. Tychicus was willing to risk himself in being there. During all these travels together, the time spent together, Paul has come to trust this man. So much so, he sends him as his messenger to Ephesus, Colossae, not only to bring the letters, but he was simply trusting him to bring all the news. Whatever Tychicus wanted to say was fine with Paul, completely trusting him in that. Now, when Tychicus leaves Rome, he is accompanied by Onesimus, who's going back to Colossae, and probably Epaphroditus, who's carrying Paul's letter to the Philippians. Now, Paul commends Tychicus with three different but related descriptions in verse 7. He says, "Tychicus, our beloved brother and faithful servant and fellow bondservant of the Lord." Each of those characteristics says more about this man. First, he's a beloved brother. A beloved brother. Agapetos adelphos. Now, that's a description that Tychicus is not only a believer, the brother part. He is part of God's family and therefore a brother in Christ, a member of the family of God. But there's a character designation here too. Beloved. That's a term of deep friendship. A term of deep friendship. Now, if you're part of God's family, you have brothers and sisters in Christ all over the world. A lot of them. But the reality is that there's very few of them that are going to become beloved to you. That is simply a matter of both character and proximity in time and place. There are many mature and wonderful Christians in the world, but we're finite creatures. We have limited capacity. We have limited capacity to know and become true friends with people. In fact, there's only going to be a very small portion of Christians around the world you're ever going to meet this side of heaven, right? Time and proximity and place don't allow it. I know reading through books or magazines and articles, there's so many people I'd love to get to know, but they lived in a different time period. Or I live in some other place that I won't be in this life. I'm not going to get to know them. They're not going to be beloved to me. I can know something about them, but they're not going to be beloved. There's not going to be that kind of intimacy of friendship. I also find that one of the frustrations in this life, and I'm sure you share the same thing, there's a lot of people who live in proximity to me. They're close by, but I don't have time to spend with them. There's too many other responsibilities, too many other things that I must also do in order to spend that time. And so the relationships are not developed the way I'd like. They're not as deep as I would like. I'm too finite. It's one of the great things about the Lord is He's not. All of us can have the same relationship with Him because there's no restrictions on Him. No restriction on time and no restriction on place for Him, right? But for us, there is. And so even though a lot of times we'd like to be very close, beloved friends with one another, it can't happen. We're too finite for that to happen. Well, in God's providence, gracious providence, Tychicus and Paul met and they became friends, and to Paul, a beloved friend. There's also an issue in making beloved friends of maturity. Let's face it, if you're trying to deal with someone who's immature, you can love them in the Lord. You can do all sorts of things for them, but it's a little difficult sometimes to have a really deep, intimate friendship with them. As we mature in character, that's easier to do. Tychicus had proved himself to be of such a character that Paul was trusting him to be a beloved friend. That says something about Tychicus. This is a man of character, not just someone off the street. This is a man he's known well and knows this is a man that is trustworthy. He is my beloved brother. This is a personal friend, an intimate friend. Tychicus, in reality, then, is a living example of the very character qualities Paul told the Colossians he wanted them to put on. To be compassionate and kind and humble and gentle, to be patient, forgiving and loving. Those all be the qualities, the maturity of character that makes someone beloved. And when these character qualities mark your life, it's easy for others to consider you beloved to them as well. And so we work at developing them. He was also a faithful servant, pistos diakonos. This description commends his character trait of being faithful in his commitment to minister. The term servant here, diakonos, is a common term for a person who serves another. The emphasis in this particular term is on the service, not the relationship to the one being served. It could be a voluntary service. It could be a forced service, as in you were a slave and had a master. You could still use the term. Tychicus is not a slave to Paul. He is doing it voluntarily. He is a servant. The particular term itself, diakonos, was a common term for table waiters. It came to be used for anyone who ministers to others. The term was applied to many specific people in the New Testament, including Phoebe, Apollos, Paul, Tychicus, Epaphras, and Timothy. It became a title for those who met particular qualifications and held responsibilities in the church. We call them deacons, deaconesses. Philippians 1:1, 1 Timothy 3. But it should be a reality that we understand that God equips every single one of us to minister, it's the same term, to be diakonos, to be those who minister to others and be faithful in fulfilling it. We also find that Tychicus was faithful in giving this voluntary service to Paul. And that's where the word pistos comes in. He's faithful. Now, pistos here is referring to his reliability, not his belief and trust, although the two always are equated or have ties with each other. They're connected. Tychicus was reliable because he believed the gospel, he trusted the Lord for his life, and Paul knew he could count on Tychicus to speak on his behalf, not just deliver the letter safely. He could speak on Paul's behalf. Now, that's another element demonstrating Tychicus' maturity and his value to Paul. Paul also calls him a fellow bondservant, soundoulos in kurio. Paul only uses this particular term for two men, Epaphras and Tychicus, both mentioned in Colossians. The term itself is used to refer to others who are slaves. Jesus uses that himself multiple times, four times in Matthew 18 alone. Someone who is a fellow slave, they're also a slave. In Revelation, it's used three times for those who are slaves of God. Fellow slaves, someone who's also a slave with me. The root term here, doulos, is often translated as servant, but it is better translated as slave because it refers to those who are in a servile relationship to their master. That is, the master owns them. Now, they may be a lousy slave, a rebellious slave, but the master still owns them. They're a slave. Now, being a slave is the actual case for all Christians because we have all been bought with the price, the precious blood of Jesus Christ shed on the cross. We are not our own. We belong to Him. That's important for us to understand. We were transferred out of the domain of darkness into the kingdom of Jesus Christ because of the purchase price made for us. And therefore, we are slaves of God. We are slaves of righteousness, no longer to be slaves of sin and slaves of the devil. New kingdom. We actually talked about that at the beginning, Colossians 1:13. Paul made his point there, the same point. Now, it was common for the apostles to refer to themselves as doulos, as slaves. I found this interesting. Paul did, Titus 1:1. So did James, James 1:1. Peter did, 2 Peter 1:1. And so did Jude, Jude 1:1. In 2 Timothy 2:24, Paul referred to all those who serve the Lord as slaves. Peter challenged all Christians to make sure they use their freedom as a covering for evil, not to use it as a covering for evil, but rather to use it as a slave of God. 1 Peter 2:16. The book of Revelation is written to a specific group, particular group of people, slaves of God. If you're not a slave of God, it wasn't written to you. It's an important term for us to understand because it should mark our life and our relationship with the God who created us and redeemed us. Now, while there is usage of the term in the general sense for all Christians, Paul rarely used it for other specific people. Paul used it to refer to Timothy along with himself as slaves of Jesus Christ, but this particular term, syndulos, fellow slaves, is only used for Epaphras and Tychicus. Now, that may be because both are willing to minister to Paul while he's being held prisoner. There's always some risk in identifying yourself with someone who's in prison, but even more so in Rome. Guilt by association could get you thrown in prison or even killed, and they took that risk. They were there with Paul while he was in jail in Rome. The term also throws one more additional light upon Tychicus' character and why he was such a good choice to take this letter and represent Paul in Colossae. For Paul to call him a fellow slave in the Lord, not just a fellow slave in the Lord, Tychicus would have to understand the preeminence of Christ in all things. And isn't that the first two chapters of Colossians? Isn't that the message that Paul is trying to make throughout this whole book? He is correcting a heresy that was rising and correcting it by saying Christ is preeminent in everything. For Tychicus to be a fellow slave in the Lord, he must understand that truth. And understanding that truth, he now can be a great encourager to all those in Colossians, in Colossae, as he gives them the letter and they read it and he explains it and helps them apply it, answers their questions. He's a living example of it. Extremely important person to send. We also find that Tychicus' character continued to be proved to be a slave of Christ after this. If we continue on looking at his later ministries, remember, Paul was in jail in Rome. He's released. He has quite a bit of ministry before he is arrested again, sent back to Rome, and then eventually beheaded. During that interim, he is sending people all over the place. Tychicus is one of them. In 2 Timothy 4:12, he is sent to Ephesus to minister in Ephesus. In Titus 3:12, he is sent specifically to Crete to relieve Titus, who Paul wanted to come to him in Nicopolis. He is trusted. He is Paul's emissary because he's a fellow slave of Christ. Now, Onesimus is also commended here, and he's a very interesting man. He's a runaway slave. He is going back to Colossae to make things right with his master, Philemon. And we're going to be looking at him in depth when we start in the book of Philemon sometime in July. But I do want to point out a couple things about him this morning. Onesimus had run away from his master in Colossae, Philemon. Somehow he made it to Rome. And in God's providence, this runaway slave met Paul. He heard the gospel, and he was converted. And he became very valuable to Paul and very quickly grew in the Lord. He is young in the Lord. Paul is in prison for 2-3 years maximum. That's all the time maximum this man would have been a Christian. And yet in that brief period, this man has already been around Paul enough and proven himself enough and his character that Paul himself calls him a beloved brother as well. He was endeared to Paul. He has also been there long enough for his character to be shining forth as one who is faithful. He is faithful. And the greatest proof of his character is in the very fact of why he is going back to Colossae. He's a runaway slave. There were slave catchers around, and they could be pretty cruel. he is going back voluntarily. Often it would be true in the ancient world, if you caught a runaway slave, you would make an example to him to all your other slaves to make sure they wouldn't run away. He doesn't know what the future is going to hold, but he knows this. He needs to do what is right. He is voluntarily making this trip from Rome all the way back to Colossae to put himself back in slavery to his master. And are you willingly going to do that? That's the character of this man. And we're going to see a lot more of it when we study the book of Philemon. Incredible man. He was living for Christ, actively setting aside the old man and putting on the new man. He also was an example of the kind of man that Paul was encouraging the Colossians to become. Two men, beloved brothers to Paul, two men that are great examples to the Colossians of exactly what it meant to walk with Christ, to live as one risen with him, to live as one whose mind is set up above and not on the things of this earth. I trust you would desire the same of your own life, to be called a faithful servant, a faithful slave of Christ. Those who prove yourself to be beloved brothers, beloved sisters of other Christians. And I do know from Ephesians that as each of us ministers the particular gifts God has equipped us with, we will help each other do exactly that. That's why we're part of a body, to encourage each other to become all that God wants us to be. And then he, in turn, uses us to keep encouraging others. Let's be like Tychicus and Onesimus.